Ruston lost his mind.
All right, Tone, get the plane.
Miami. South Beach, bringing the heat. Can y'all feel that? Can y'all feel that? Jig it out. Here I am in the place where I come let go. In Miami, the base and the sunset low. Every day like a Mardi Gras. Everybody party all day. No work, all play, okay? So we sip a little something, leave the rest to spill. Me and Charlie at the bar running up a high bill. Nothing less than ill when we dress to kill. Every time the ladies pass, they be like, can y'all feel me? All ages and races, real sweet faces. Every different nation, Spanish.
Hello and welcome to the Thunderous Transmissions podcast. After a long break, we are here with a good friend of mine, David Ramil. David writes over at Hardwood Paroxysm, Vice Sports, Fansided. He also co-hosts the Heat Check Pod with Wes Goldberg. David, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Sean. Glad to be back.
Yeah, it's been a while. Originally, and I will say this is like 99% my fault, probably 100% my fault, but we've been scheduling this for a while just due to complications out of my control, mainly on my wife. I'm going to blame it on her because she's not going to listen to this. We are finally doing this about a week later than originally anticipated. And I wanted to have David on because he's based out of Florida. He's a Miami Heat fan, but he also he keeps an eye on, at least, with the Orlando Magic. And with the Thunder Magic trade going down on draft night last Thursday, I wanted to have him on, especially now, to sort of talk about that. For those of you that have been living in a bubble or just didn't hear whatever it was, Serge Ibaka was traded for Victor Oladipo, Domantas Sabonis, and Ersan Ilyasova. David, I just want to get your thoughts, and why don't you start sort of by looking at it with the Magic perspective? What are just your general thoughts from the Magic's ownership?
Well, I know the criticism is that they gave up an awful lot, but within context of how the Orlando Magic roster had shaped up, I think Victor Oladipo was a bit of a disappointment. You know, he's not much of a shooter, although he did improve in that regard. He wasn't nearly aggressive enough and active in getting to the free throw line, so that's always been a problem for him. And there was kind of a duplication of what they could do at the backcourt between him and Elfrid Payton, who is their starting point guard. And if you remember, Payton was a big point of contention, apparently, with Scott Skiles, and part of the reason why he at least resigned is because he couldn't get, you know, the management, the front office, to understand that maybe Elfrid Payton wasn't nearly as good as they believed and not the right choice for the point guard of the future. So they had to clear that a little bit. I guess the management decided Payton was worth sticking around. Oladipo might not ever reach his potential. He's very athletic. He's a good defensive player, etc. But I guess they kind of felt that with Mario Hezonja waiting in the wings and possibly Evan Fournier, who, you know, we're going to talk about later as a potential free agent, you know, they thought they had enough options at guard where they could move a guy like Oladipo. He was clearly the centerpiece from their perspective. They also lacked rim protection. They also lacked a strong rebounding edge, although they've got Aaron Gordon and Nikola Vucevic at the center position. But they did lack a little toughness, and I think Ibaka clearly brings that. He's also a star name, something that they were lacking as well. I think Aaron Gordon, you saw his, you know, start to rise a little bit following the slam dunk contest, which I think was one of the last times we spoke, you and I, mm-hmm. was reviewing the slam dunk contest because he was such a brilliant performer in that. So there's some potential there, and I think the Magic see themselves as a player in free agency this summer. And so they want to add something that they were lacking. And I think Ibaka certainly brings that, a veteran presence for a very young team. A little toughness, like I said, activity. Somebody who's experienced in the playoff scenarios that they envision themselves being in next season. So I think it's a good fit. I know they gave up Ersan Ilyasova, who is, you know, a quality veteran who can shoot the ball a little bit, who can defend a little bit. From Oklahoma City's perspective, I know they thought they were getting a lot of, you know, the same things that Ibaka brought for a lot cheaper than what Serge was going to cost. But I think they were willing to sacrifice a guy like that in Orlando. And I don't know. It clears up a lot of, you know, potential options for them as well. And like I said, they're going to be players in free agency. At least that's how they see themselves.
Yeah, I think I agree with everything you're saying there. Everybody that I've seen from the Oklahoma City sort of fan base talked about what a fleecing it was for the Thunder, and I don't necessarily agree, and I'll get to that in a little bit when we talk about the Thunder side of this, but for the Magic, it sort of makes sense. If they and Serge Ibaka are willing to put Serge at the five, at least part-time. They've got – you talked about Vucevic, who's a great offensive player, but he has his defensive limitations. And honestly, you really couldn't play him and Ilyasova together because you don't have any rim protection. They were trying to put Aaron Gordon at the three, which it looks like they're still going to have to do at least part-time after the trade. And Serge Ibaka is able to protect the rim a little bit. I think, you know, some of his rim protection numbers were down last year, and I think some of that was due to the emergence of Steven Adams, because Steven Adams was such a good, or I'll save that a little bit, but he became a better rim protector, which allowed Serge to switch more on the perimeter, and they didn't have to just put him at the rim. Also, Billy Donovan's defense is a little more aggressive than Scott Brooks was, so, you know, he was switching, he was jumping out, they were double team, they were doing different things on the perimeter because he had a rim protector behind him. Now, it could be that Serge Ibaka is not as good as he used to be, and you saw that with some of his shooting numbers and things like that, but I haven't been as high probably as others on Victor Oladipo. I think the perception of Victor Oladipo is a lot better than what he actually is.
Absolutely.
His shooting numbers aren't very good. I think he's just a touch below league average from three, which, you know, after you watch Andre Roberson for 2 years shoot threes, that's definitely an upgrade. But you're talking about him and Russ in the backcourt. Neither of them are very good three-point shooters. Sabonis, you don't know anything about him. I mean, you'd love to think that he's going to be great. And Ersan Ilyasova, who you talked about, the Thunder are going to probably pick up his option. They have to decide on July 1st, which is the first day that they can talk to other free agents, for about $8.4 million, which isn't that much. It's probably a value contract for a guy who is as good as Ilyasova is. But you don't know anything about Sabonis. I think the thing for the Thunder, and it's sort of been beat the last few days, is team control. The Serge Ibaka was going to be an unrestricted free agent, meaning the Thunder wouldn't really have any decision if he decided to go elsewhere. They couldn't control him, whereas Victor Oladipo will also be a free agent after the upcoming season, but he's a restricted free agent, so the Thunder have the right to first refusal. And Sabonis, obviously, is a rookie who the Thunder have team control for at least the next 4 years. Ilyasova, he's probably expendable at this point, but, you know, if we're still talking about the Magic, I don't hate it. I don't like that their roster seems to not fit together, but that doesn't have anything to do with Serge Ibaka. I think what Serge brings is a touch of shooting from either the four or the five. He's still a very good defender. He may have slipped some, but you saw what he's capable of. He's always been very good as far as big men go at guarding the perimeter, and you saw that on Steph Curry. You saw that on Klay Thompson. And I know he fouled three-point shooters, and that was a boneheaded move, but he's still very good at that. So I don't love the Magic in general, but as far as this trade goes, I don't think they got fleeced.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you know, this is still possibly just the first of many steps to come. They could potentially find a market for Vucevic on via trade. If somebody wants, like you mentioned, an offensive-minded center. Yeah, he's got his defensive issues, but there's also the potential there defensively. He is still extraordinarily young. He reminds me a little bit maybe of at least Enes Kanter in that sense, is that there's still room for growth defensively. You know, I think he's been in the league 4 or 5 years now, but he's still under 25, if I'm not mistaken, or right around that point. So, yeah, there's still a potential there, I think, and they could move him. His contract's a little unwieldy, I think, but, you know, he is a good scorer, good rebounder in bunches, and, you know, they could move him. He does create options there, or they could just keep Aaron Gordon off the bench, which is another potential issue. We saw some spurts from him as the season ended where they think maybe he might be the point, the power forward of the future. And I think that's certainly the case there with Gordon. I think he fits better at the four than at the three. So I'd like to see him stay at power forward, which becomes a little less likely now with the acquisition of Serge Ibaka, unless you bring him off the bench. And if that's the case, then you're looking at a potential lineup of Ibaka at the center position, and Aaron Gordon starting, or you know, with Vucevic, if they keep him there, then you have Aaron Gordon coming off the bench, and he can kind of ignite that second team a little bit and bring that same energy and athleticism that he's always possessed.
Yeah, I think Aaron Gordon, at this point in his career, is still, you know, he's still young enough that if you bring him off the bench and you play him, you know, as the four, hopefully, strictly the four, maybe, you know, if you have to play him at some three, I guess getting some playing time is not the end of the world. But some four, maybe alongside Serge Ibaka at the five, that would be, I mean, that looks like a great defensive lineup with Ibaka at the five, Gordon at the four. Great. And then you can, so you know, Peyton's still a very good defender on point guards. Hazonia's got the length maybe to guard some twos and or twos and some threes. So that leaves you with only one hole maybe defensively. I think there's definitely potential for the Magic. And, you know, we're talking right now, what is it, June 27th. We're still 4 days out from free agency. So they can do things, and they do have a lot of money coming in. Depending on what they do, and like you said, we'll talk about that in just a minute. So I want to move on to Oklahoma City. I'm a little closer to the situation than you are, so I'm just going to start, and I want you to chime in whenever, you know, you disagree or if you agree or whatever, with whatever it is. But, you know, the Thunder received Victor Oladipo, and I guess I'll start there, and I talked a little bit about this. I think what Victor Oladipo brings is at least somewhat of a stabilizing force at the off guard. Now, Deion Waiters was very good for a lot of the playoffs, but you saw what he did for most of the regular season. And while he was a good shooter from three, his true shooting percentage was still under 50%. And, you know, for those that aren't versed in those statistics, league average is like 53%, 54%. So being under 50% as a guy who's supposed to be a scorer, it's just not good for the Thunder. And a lot of that was because he was playing with the second lineup where he was asked to do most of the work. But, you know, now he's a free agent, so the Thunder sort of have to decide what to do with him. And at least bringing Oladipo in, you know, and I think there's still some question whether they're going to start Oladipo or bring him off the bench, and I guess a lot of that depends on what they do with Deion Waiters. But Oladipo's at least got the potential to be a very good both on- and off-ball defender, whereas Deion's a good on-ball defender, and it doesn't look like he's ever going to be a good off-ball defender. But there's something that they can do with Oladipo. Plus, I talked about the team control, which is great. Sabonis, I'm going to be honest, the Thunder didn't have a first-round draft pick, so I didn't pay attention to a lot of the draft talk. I didn't really look at some of the Draft Express videos on, you know, the players in that range, because I didn't expect the Thunder. In fact, I actually wrote something for today's Fast Break about how they were not going to train. I guess I clarified it a little bit by saying the centerpiece will not be a draft pick, because there were some rumors. I think Mark Spears of the Undefeated was the first one to say something that they wouldn't trade Ibaka centered around a draft pick. So I don't know anything about Sabonis. I know he's a 6'10 forward from Gonzaga who looks like he can pass and score around the rim and is a very good rebounder, but he's going to have his defensive limitations because he's a rookie. Ersan Ilyasova is sort of what he is. He's not going to be great on defense, but he's going to provide some of that stretch for. He's a pretty good shooter from the outside. He's been that way for most of his career. He's actually been a decent rebounder for most of his career as well. I guess we can get into that a little bit later. But what are your thoughts from Oklahoma City's perspective?
Well, you hear later on about how Serge Ibaka may have, had his feathers ruffled a little bit because of his role. I think they've been, discussing that at length, is that Billy Donovan may have overpromised a larger role over the course of the season, and maybe just because of the way things worked out, or because maybe he hadn't done necessarily enough to earn it, he didn't get that larger role. So he was clearly a little upset with the way the team had been using him. And so Oklahoma City has historically always shown a willingness to trade guys away that might not necessarily be happy there. They want people who are happy to be there, who are committed and fully on board. And I guess Ibaka may have been a little distracted, although I don't know you could say that based on his play. But they were willing to move on. I know a lot of people have also talked about whether or not this would, keep Kevin Durant from possibly re-signing in Oklahoma City. But, I think we've also heard recently that he's at least chimed in, or maybe wasn't necessarily actively involved, but he wasn't upset about the move. He knew about it, and he didn't necessarily veto it or anything like that, which you assume a player of his superstar status would be able to do. So, if Ibaka was no longer comfortable there, like you mentioned, a free agent, he wasn't going to re-sign there, he was going to cost the team a lot of money, it's a good move. I think it's one of those rare deals that actually fits both teams. I think you know, Orlando definitely needed somebody that could protect the rim, that brings a little star power, that could add a little defensive presence, that's a veteran that knows how to get a team into the playoffs, et cetera. And I think from Oklahoma City's perspective, they've added some depth there. They've also added, you know, like you mentioned, some stability at the shooting guard position. So I think it works out for both teams. I don't think either team got fleeced, and I think they addressed certain needs that they had.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I want to talk about there. The first is Serge Ibaka. I think he was, or at least when Billy Donovan was brought in, I think Ibaka thought or was told or something that he was going to have a bigger role. But Ibaka's just, I don't think he's capable of doing the things that Billy Donovan wants. Billy Donovan wants a big man, you know, sort of like Steven Adams. Steven Adams is able to at least execute a dribble handoff. He's not a great passer, but he's a good passer at least.
Right.
And Ibaka's neither of those things. Ibaka can't put the ball on the ground. Ibaka can't catch the ball. Ibaka isn't a very good passer. So I don't know exactly what happened, but this sort of feels like it was generated by Billy Donovan saying, I love Ibaka, but I can't use him on the offensive end as I want to. So I think a lot of that, it appears as though Donovan didn't love what was going on. And, you know, Ibaka made some comments throughout the season, which I think everyone is referring back to now, about how he's not being used, and it's amazing what I can do when the ball is passed a couple of times. And, you know, a lot of that I think is true. And maybe Ibaka has it and just wasn't able to show it in Oklahoma City. But I can tell you at, you know, 27 years old, I've watched him now since he was, you know, 2009 when he played his first game for the Thunder. And never has he been able to develop any sort of a dribble handoff or pass or, you know, just execute the simplest things that doesn't require shooting or screening or something like that.
You mentioned his age, too, and that's another rumor. I don't know if you saw that, but people are alleging that maybe he might be potentially older than he's claiming to be, and that might be why he's degraded a little bit, or his level of play is degraded a little. So that's an interesting factor also.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really like speculating on that, but I have, I mean, I've heard the same thing, and you heard it with Bismack Biyombo, you're hearing with Thon Maker out of the draft, how just some of these guys that you don't have a lot of information on, you don't know how old they are. And I think Ibaka is 27, if I'm not mistaken, and will be 28 at his next contract. So there is something that, you know, maybe he's starting to wear down, which could mean that he's a little older than whatever he's listed at, but I don't know, so I'm just going to assume, you know, probably naively that he's as old as I'm being told.
He did play 70 plus games last year, too,
yeah,
so I don't think injury was an issue.
Right. No, I agree with you. I don't remember what my second point was there. So let's move on to the Magic offseason. So with this trade, they have a little over $41 million committed. And if you don't remember, the cap's going to explode to about $94 million. That can still move a little bit. I've heard some rumors that could be even closer to 95 after the league's moratorium, which ends July 6th, I believe. They have about a little under $67 million after cap hold, which means that there's some free agents that they're still responsible for until they either renounce them or they sign elsewhere. So I'm going to go through this, and I'm not going to go through it, you know, a whole ton, but I'm just going to hit some of the big points. They do have a $12.5 million hold for Brandon Jennings. I would assume that they either renounce him or sign him to a contract that's lower than that. He's coming off, well, I guess he played half of a season, but he ruptured his Achilles about a season and a half ago. He came back and looked okay, not great. I guess 12.5 is a little higher than he's going to get in free agency, but, you know, what do I know? They have a $6 million hold for Andrew Nicholson and about a $6 million hold for Evan Fournier. Both of those are restricted free agents, which means they have the right to first refusal. They can match whatever contract so long as they extend the qualifying offer, which I expect they will. About a $5 million hold for Jason Smith and 1.2 for Dwayne Dedman. What do you think Orlando does in free agency? And you can be general here, what they're looking for, or maybe more specific as to certain players, these players, other players, just in general, what do you expect?
You know, that's a tough question to answer, particularly because of the hiring of Frank Vogel. You don't really know what they're looking for at this point. I don't think he's been very specific about what he's looking for as far as adding to the team. You know, the Ibaka move doesn't fit exactly, because I think he wanted to play with a faster pace, and then bringing a guy like Ibaka doesn't necessarily help with that, and certainly not removing a person like Oladipo. So there's some question there as to whether or not they want to, you know, improve the overall speed of the roster. I would think that Jennings is probably not going to be brought back. I think he was added there because of Scott Skiles there. He wanted to bring his guys there. It's the second time that he had traded away Tobias Harris. Clearly there's some friction there. And then adding a guy like Jennings and Ilyasova, those were guys that played for him when he was coaching in Milwaukee. So now with Skiles no longer in the picture, I'd say they're probably likely to move on there, probably go a little bit younger and maybe a little bit more quality. I think Jennings did add some big moments there, but overall he was just okay. Fournier, I think, is a centerpiece as far as what they're looking to bring back. Clearly they want him there. He adds a lot of shooting, athleticism. He can drive. He's savvy. I think he's a good fit there. I think that a lot of people probably aren't as familiar with him playing in Orlando, but I think he does definitely add something to the team. So I would say they want him back. I think they're looking to make a big splash. I just don't know how realistic that is. They're not going to be players for any of the bigger names in free agency, but maybe they'll look to bring somebody else back. I know they've been rumored to bring back I'm drawing a blank now. Dwight Howard, there we are. Having played in Orlando, I think they're looking for, you know, somebody like that. But with Serge Ibaka, that's probably not going to happen. No need to duplicate that kind of rim protector there unless you can find somebody who's willing to take Vucevic. So, I'm not really sure. I think, like I said, Vogel hasn't necessarily been very clear about what he wants, but bringing in some quality shooting, the perimeter shooting wasn't that great. Removing Oladipo didn't help in that regard, so they clearly going to need to bring in somebody like that, and probably a little bit more athleticism. Not youth, they had plenty of that, and they removed a lot of that with Oladipo and Harris, but I think something like that. A little bit more quality veteran presence also. This is a young team, I've already written it on a number of occasions, but to me, Orlando's roster has always been somewhat amorphous, just kind of formless. A lot of quality talent there, but not necessarily fitting a specific need, and not quite like Milwaukee's plan of just adding all this length and height at every position. It's more about just talent, but it doesn't necessarily fit together. That's why you had this duplication of skills in Tobias Harris and Aaron Gordon, guys that are somewhat tweeners that doesn't necessarily fit a specific position. So I think you're looking for somebody who fits a clearer, more skilled role, and we'll have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, the nice thing about Orlando is they do have just a ton of money to work with. Like I mentioned, sure, it's $67 million after cap holds, but that includes the 12.5 for Jennings, who you sort of said you think won't come back. So that's another 12.5 that they get cleared up. That's enough room besides Evan Fournier to have almost two max contract guys, and we're looking at the guys between 7 to 9 years of experience. If they're looking at guys between, I guess it would be 4 to 6, you're talking a little bit more than that. So maybe they're pretty light in the front court after Gordon, Ibaka, and Vucevic. Maybe they look at a guy like Harrison Barnes or Marvin Williams, who can sort of play the 3 and the 4. They also bring some shooting. They do some things that they don't necessarily have on their roster. The problem with Orlando is, even with those guys, if you're talking about adding one of those two guys, maybe someone else, and keeping Evan Fournier, I just don't know if you're very good still. I don't know. You might be a playoff team in the East, but what does that mean? You're going to lose to LeBron James in either the first, second, or Eastern Conference Finals, and I don't know what your ceiling is. It doesn't feel like it's very high. So I don't know. I've just never been one that's been in love with their team. There is one thing I want to point out with the Ibaka trade that I didn't talk about earlier. I think Serge Ibaka with Frank Vogel is going to be a pretty nasty pairing. I'm thinking back to what Frank Vogel did with Jan Mahimi, and then a guy like Roy Hibbert. And while those guys are more traditional centers, Serge Ibaka is a far better defender than either of those two. Yeah, at least more a versatile defender. So I think he can. I think Vogel will make Ibaka look maybe more like two seasons ago Ibaka rather than the season that we just finished, which is great for the Magic, but even that isn't enough to sort of make me feel optimistic about the current Magic roster. Even, you know, adding, like I mentioned before, Barnes or Williams or and keeping Fournier, who they're going to have to pay $20 million. I don't know. Just it's not my favorite team right now in the East.
No, I agree. Chandler Parsons is also another name that's been tossed around a lot just because of his, you know, I think he's from the area, and I think he also played at University of Florida, so he's very closely linked here.
Right. And maybe it's like a Joakim Noah destination where you can just put the band back together. Maybe throw Al Horford. He's a free agent this year, too. Just get all of the, 2004-05 Florida Gators and just run it back.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think Courtney Lee's under contract, right?
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so let's talk about Oklahoma City's offseason. Obviously, the we're pending one Kevin Durant's free agency.
Is that a big storyline?
I don't. Maybe not here, but I think in Miami they're talking about it a little bit. So Oklahoma City has about $70 million in committed salary for next year. When you and that's including Ersan Ilyasova, who I just assume because he has a July 1st date, they can move on from him if they really need to. If they can trade him for just into cap space, and that's really not going to matter. But they have about $102 million with cap holds, and that does include Kevin Durant. That includes Deion Waiters' qualifying offer, who they have to make a decision on June 30th, and a $3.5 million option that's due to Anthony Morrow. Now, they do have about until July 15th to decide on Anthony Morrow, so they can sort of see what happens in free agency. The problem for Oklahoma City is they don't have any cap room. The cap's at $94 million. They'll have their mid-level exception, which is like $5.6 million. But with all the money being thrown out there, you know, that's not that money just doesn't get you what it used to, what it did even last summer. You know, you look at a guy like you know, Miami Heat's Josh McRoberts, who signed, I don't know if he signed exactly for the mid-level, but I think he's right at about $5.5 million.
That's
and
right.
If he was a free agent this year, he would get far more than that just because of what he can do, not necessarily based on what he did. I think the only thing left for Oklahoma City, unless something happens, and we can talk about that, that's very surprising with a trade, but is just to decide whether Deion Waiters is back. And I've waned back and forth sort of on how I feel about Deion Waiters. I don't think the playoff Deion Waiters is the Deion Waiters that we'll always see. However, if he's able to play with Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, no longer Serge Ibaka, but Steven Adams, then he's given more of that facilitator role that you saw and just stand in the corner and knock down open threes and guard, you know, whoever they have. He did an excellent job on Kawhi Leonard and Draymond Green in the playoffs, but I'm a little dubious that the Deion Waiters that we saw the last four seasons is going to be the one that's his true self and not the one that we just saw.
And for all the depth that you add there, I mean, the question of whether or not you bring back Deion Waiters, do you bring back Anthony Morrow as well? I mean, are you willing to sacrifice both of those pieces of your backcourt? When they played reasonably well, I mean, Morrow didn't play very much. He got his spot minutes every once in a while. But do you see him as being part of Oklahoma City's future?
Anthony Morrow?
Yeah.
I think he'll be on the roster because I don't think you can do much better than Anthony Morrow for $3.5 million.
Probably not.
But I think it's just going to be a repeat of this year, especially, you know, even if they don't bring back Deion Waiters, you still have Andre Roberson, you're still going to have Anthony Morrow, you still have Victor Oladipo, you still have Cameron Payne, and if he's playing at the same time as Russ, then, you know, Payne's effectively the off guard.
Is Randy Foy a free agent?
Randy Foy is a free agent. I think the Thunder will just let him go. I don't even think I included him in the cap holds. He's got about a $6 million cap hold. I sort of, and the Thunder, I believe, have full bird rights, meaning they can exceed the cap to pay him whatever. I think they'll just kind of let him go because they don't have the room, especially if they're going to try to develop Cameron Payne. So I think Morrow will be – I think they'll keep him, like I said, because they can't really do much better with that $3.5 million. But I don't think he's going to play much more than he did this season, which is fine. I think there's a reason that Anthony Morrow doesn't play very much, especially when it comes to playoff time, and it's because he just doesn't have the athleticism or the foot speed to stay in front of quicker players. And so you have to find a hole for him to – to guard. And when you're talking about the Spurs, it's not going to be whoever the point guard, Tony Parker, Danny Green, or Patty Mills. If you're talking about the Warriors, obviously you can't put him out there. So I think it's fine. I'm fine with him on the roster as long as the Thunder can avoid the luxury tax this year, which is sort of a big deal. So to answer the question, yeah, I do see him on the roster. I see them picking up that option for this year.
But Deion Waiters will not be back in Oklahoma City.
I don't know. I think it really depends on what he gets. They've talked about that, you know, $15 million is sort of the what the average salary is going to be for a starter. I think if Deion's salary gets into the – I think if it's honestly anything about 12.5, 13, the Thunder are going to decline and just let him walk. If it's anything under that, especially if it's a shorter contract – now, he's a restricted free agent, so any contract has to be at least 2 seasons. Right. I think that the Thunder will probably sign up for that. I think, you know, it's sort of the problem is last year with Enes Kanter is they don't have the available resources to replace him. So they either bring him back – under a reasonable contract, and you know, at least to Kevin Durant, it looks like they're trying. I expect Kevin Durant to sign before Deion Waiters, just because that's what normally happens with unrestricted free agents. But if they let him go, then you know, maybe even though I'm not the highest on Deion Waiters' level of play, maybe Kevin Durant looks at that and says, "Look what he did for us in the postseason. He gave us good minutes all season long." Even if I would disagree with that statement. I'm not very happy, and I'm going to one of the other 5 teams that I've scheduled a meeting for. Now, this I don't think is going to happen in any realm, but let's say that he was signing with the or the Heat were going to make him an offer. What would you feel comfortable paying Deion Waiters?
I think realistically between $8 to $10 million.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's the skill set that he can provide. I think that's a good value for what, you know, what he could bring. He doesn't always bring, you know, there's going to be wild inconsistency there. You know, I don't think he's, for all the talk about Waiters Island and the arrogance and the inconsistency and everything else, he's never been a problem off the court. So I think he'd fit whatever Heat culture they might have there. I think he's a solid player, a solid person overall, let's say. I mean, I don't know him personally, but yeah, I think he'd be a good fit for $8 to $10 million. That seems about right.
Yeah, and you talk about, or you didn't specifically talk, but you know, there's some talk about his age and how he can still develop as a player. Victor Oladipo is, I think, 6 months younger than Deion Waiters. Andre Robertson's like a week or two older than Deion Waiters, and at least, you know, for all of Andre Robertson's downfalls, he still has an elite skill. He's still a very, very good defender, and you saw that, and I think you even wrote about that last year, what happened when he missed some time. Oklahoma's defense definitely suffered.
Right.
So, and I don't think that was all due to Robertson, but at least you can say some of that was probably due to his absence. So, you know, there's how much can you commit to trying to develop Deion when you've got all of these other young pieces? You're trying to keep Kevin Durant around. I think the idea is that he's going to stay in Oklahoma City for one more year. And how much of that time are you going to waste, you know, saying, well, we need to develop Deion Waiters and Domantas Sabonis and Cameron Payne and still make Kevin Durant happy? I just, you know, like you said, if it's 8 to 10, I expect the Thunder to match, even though I don't know if I necessarily would. Anything north of the 12, as soon as we get to whatever it is, 3 for 36, or heaven forbid, 4 for 48, I think the Thunder would probably let him walk. So, I don't know. That's just some of my thoughts, although I would, you know, with the Serge Ibaka being traded on draft night, which I was definitely... I don't know, pessimistic that would happen. It very well could happen, and along with Kanter's contract last year, the Thunder could be on the hook for another contract that, you know, while Kanter's looks a little better a year later, I don't know if Deion's would necessarily look as good.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so let's move on to the real reason that we schedule this, and that's Miami Heat's offseason. Now, they didn't have a first-round draft pick, but they are one of 6 teams that Kevin Durant has agreed to meet with as far as free agents go. unless Dwayne Wade takes just a giant pay cut, and we're talking like minimum salary pay cut, the Miami Heat wouldn't be able to sign all three of Whiteside, Wade, and then add Kevin Durant. So I guess what percentage of chance do you think the Heat have of signing Kevin Durant?
If I had to ascribe a number to it, I'd probably say 5% or less. Because okay. I think you know, they could make a move to bring those three players back if they moved Goran Dragic, which I think some people have been discussing as a possibility. Although he kind of came on late in the season and played very well in the playoffs, or had, you know, good moments in the playoffs. So I think if they were able to unload a guy like Goran Dragic, which seems more of a possibility when you can start a guy like Josh Richardson, who adds a different skill set. He's not nearly as good at driving to the rim, but he's a better shooter. I guess he's shown that he's a better shooter from the perimeter, and he's also much better as a defender. So having Josh Richardson, who was a great value as a second-round pick last year, potentially being your starter, and then clearing the cap space of Goran Dragic's contract so that you can add a guy like Kevin Durant, I think you might even wind up improving the team that way. So I think that's a potential option. But it's always a good vindication, particularly for Heat fans, to know that Miami can always get a meeting. Even last year, when they met with LaMarcus Aldridge, who had no intention of signing with Miami, I think it's always, again, a vindication that you could say, a validation that, you know, Pat Riley still has that impact on free agents, that he can still grab guys and at least get in their ear and talk to them. And you know, they feel, even to this day, they still feel honored that Riley's willing to meet with them. You know, there's mystique around him, which I've written about in the past that might be overblown, but the players certainly feel it, and they appreciate it. And there's a good team there in the front office that is willing to do things creatively, out of the box thinking, and moving, you know, players and numbers around in order to accommodate somebody like that. And you know, you never know. I don't know that we've ever heard specifically. A lot of people want to believe they know what Kevin Durant values, that he's loyal, that he is emotional, that he's this, that, and the other. And I don't think anybody knows. He might just want to be playing in the South Beach sun all the time. We don't know. He could want to go to a team like Boston. A lot of people don't think that's a realistic option, but they have assets. They can be an alluring destination for a guy like Durant. So I think Miami has as good a chance as any other team not named Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I think this probably isn't the nicest thing to say, but I think Kevin Durant's interests are basketball. And probably outside of that, I'm not sure exactly what type of person Kevin Durant is, because I don't think anybody really knows, because everything you see revolving around Kevin Durant is basketball. You know, Dwayne Wade has his fashion interests, and LeBron James obviously has a ton of things going on. Every other star, I guess, outside of Kawhi Leonard, who I'm not sure is a real person, has some sort, you know, even Russell Westbrook, his teammates, obviously into 100 different things. And Kevin Durant, all you know is basketball. So I don't know exactly what he's interested in. I don't even know if he knows what he's looking forward to come meeting time.
Doesn't he have interest, though? I mean, he's got business interests there in Oklahoma City. He mm-hmm. does do some, not necessarily fashion things. He's not quite at the same level as Wade or Bosch or Westbrook. But, I mean, there is some interest there, right, in shoes and things and of that sort. I mean, he's got sponsorship deals. I mean, mm-hmm. it's not all just tied to what he does on the court.
No. And he has a restaurant, I know, in Oklahoma City. But outside of that, I think that it's just not as pronounced probably as the other ones. Okay. So, you know, and that's unusual for a star who doesn't live in San Antonio. But... back to your point on Pat Riley, I think that getting the meeting is still impressive, because it's not like Kevin Durant went to all of the big markets and said I'm going to meet with you. You know, he's not put, at least what's been put out there. He's not meeting with the Knicks. He's not meeting with the Lakers, and he's meeting with the Clippers. I mean, I think that alone should at least signal something. He's not meeting with the Bulls. He's not meeting with a lot of these big teams that have this history of success, unless they have recent success. I think the six teams, it looks like, five including Oklahoma City, are Golden State, San Antonio, Boston, Miami, and the Clippers. So, I mean, you look around at all of those teams, and they've at least had some recent success, and it looks like, you know, when Kevin Durant, he's going to get however much money he wants in free agency, and he wants to immediately contribute to a winning team. So I think Miami, you know, just getting the meeting is, you know, is something. You can use that as leverage later on to maybe Hassan Whiteside, who's a free agent, maybe even with Dwayne Wade, trying to convince him to take a little less money. But I don't know. I still think it's at least something that the Heat fans should look at and be proud of, even though I agree that there's probably a 5% or less chance that Durant's going to sign there. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the last thing we're going to do here is we're going to run through some of the Heat free agents, and we're not going to do like all of them because I think there's 100 of Heat free agents that are either going to stay or leave, but that's exactly what I'm going to ask you. Do they stay or do they go? I'm going to start with a couple of obvious ones, but one thing, you don't have to put yourself out there too much, but I want you to, if they stay, to sort of tell me what you expect money-wise to do, especially for this first one, Dwayne Wade.
That's a tough one. I mean, I think obviously he wants to stay here. I think he's always talked about wanting to retire as a Heat player, not wanting to go anywhere. Even last year when there seemed like there might be some tension between him and Pat Riley and the rest of the front office, that was blown over pretty quickly. So I think he stays, obviously, unless they can find some way of getting a creative super team with Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony to play alongside LeBron James. He's not going anywhere else. So I think for now he's going to stay in Miami. And what we've heard is 3 years that he's looking to play. So how much he's willing to get paid or collect in payment for those 3 years, I would say probably around 45, maybe to as high as 60 million, which puts it, a big range of 15 to 20 million a year. But I think he's earned that over the course of his career and everything he's done for this franchise. So that seems pretty realistic.
Yeah, I think I agree. There's a couple of things that intrigue me with Dwayne Wade's free agency. First of all, they could do what sort of Wes Matthews did last year with the Mavericks in that, they signed a tentative deal. Maybe it's for $10 million or whatever it is. And then they agree that whatever's left over in their cap room, they're just going to pay Dwayne Wade. They can, if he signs a deal, let's say it's worth $5 million or whatever, the nice thing about that, not only do they get that money this year, but next year his cap hold is going to be something very small. So whatever money they can use, maybe it's $10 million his cap hold is, but they can pay him up to the max. They can pay him whatever they want to do. So if he takes a small contract this year, it really helps the Miami Heat, not only this summer, but next summer, because they can wait until the last minute to pay Dwayne Wade and then pay him, whatever he asks for. And the only thing that it hurts is Mickey Arison's checkbook.
The problem with that, though, he's already sacrificed tens of millions over the course of his tenure with Miami, and he seemed a little less likely to do so last year. He could have done that same option laid out last season. He didn't do it. He's like, look, I want to get paid after having given up as much as I have over in recent years, and he got his $20 million deal for 1 year. So I think he's looking to get some money and maybe not kind of superstar level money, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and he could sign that Kobe contract, and to be honest, I wouldn't discourage that at all if I were Dwayne Wade's agent. So what about Udonis Haslem?
Yeah, he's coming back. I think he's also talked about another 3 years, and with a guy like UD, he knows where he's at this point in his career. I think a veteran minimum seems realistic. I had a chance to talk to him personally at the end of last season, and he recognizes his place as part of South Florida culture and with the team, and he's had options to go elsewhere, Denver, Dallas, and other teams that would have loved a guy like him, and he's happy in Miami, South Florida, so I think he comes back there.
And he's a Florida guy all the way, isn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. He went to Miami High School. He grew up in Overtown, which is right near where the American Airlines Arena is, and he's South Florida for life. He's got a tattoo of Florida on his back.
Yeah.
He's not going anywhere.
Yeah, no, he's not leaving either. Okay, so what about Gerald Green?
I don't think they'd like to bring him back, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there's still that sort of fishy situation. Just like with Mitch McGarry, he went away for a while, and we know a little bit more about Gerald Green's situation, but, and maybe the Heat didn't love that so much.
I don't even know that it's that. I think they're willing to take a flyer on a guy who produces on the court, even if he has an altercation off of it. But the problem was that he came back, he lost his confidence, he kind of fell out of the rotation, he got some minutes later on. And, you know, Gerald Green is who he is. You know, he's inconsistent at times. He can shoot himself in and out of games. And that was, you know, that was a plus on some occasions. It also was a great blight for a number of others. He did make some, I think he took some positive steps defensively, which he had said at the beginning of the year he wanted to do. And he did that. I think he played better than a lot of people expected him. But I think if you're going to, if you're going to set aside a roster space, you probably want it for somebody a little younger who you can develop, a guy like Tyler Johnson.
Right. So let's move into Tyler Johnson. He is a restricted free agent. He's also limited, I think, the Arenas rule, which means they can't, no team can offer him more for the first two seasons than the mid-level exception, which we talked about is about 5.7, and then it increases the second year. But the third year, they can max him. They can pay him what would be, I don't know, $24, $25 million because of his experience. What do you expect the Heat to do? Do you think he'll come back?
Yes, I think they love him. You know, his energy, his athleticism, his shooting, which was greatly improved. I think, you know, he sustained a shoulder injury that kind of threw him for a loop a little bit and maybe kind of, you know, derailed his progress. But I think with an offseason of work and rehabilitation, I'm sure he'll get back to the point where he was. I don't think he's going to be part of the team's summer league roster, which I'm a little disappointed in. But, I mean, even last year when he was in summer league, he took that vicious blow to the face where he had his jaw wired shut. I mean, it was, you know, potentially, you know, disastrous injury, but he was able to bounce back and had a really good year. He got some starter minutes. He can play the one or two positions. So I think he's a great asset there. He's still young enough, and you could probably get him relatively cheaply. So I think he's a good fit for them and a good building block for the future.
Yeah, I think he probably comes back. The interesting thing on his contract, and it's the same way with Jordan Clarkson in L.A., is for the Miami Heat, if Tyler Johnson goes out and gets the mid-level exception for the first 2 years, and then let's just say it's a $25 million contract for the third year, the cap hit for the Miami Heat would be exactly that, the mid-level exception for the first 2 years, and then the giant increase the third year. But for any other team, whoever's the team that originally signs him to the contract, it's just the average salary for each of the 3 years. And that's something that you saw with Omar Asik and Jeremy Lin. I think, you know, the poison pill contract a couple of years ago. Something that I thought was just pretty interesting. And I checked with, I don't remember his name, the Miami Heat guy on Twitter who knows a ton of stuff about salary cap stuff.
Just, Albert Namad, I think.
Exactly, yeah. And he did verify that that's true, which I just think is interesting from the Heat's perspective because it saves them a ton of money for the first 2 years and then sort of makes him an interesting trade chip right before that third year, both for the Heat and any team acquiring him.
Yeah.
All right, so what about Joe Johnson?
That's a little tougher to predict, right? I mean, he fits, you know, the standard as far as Miami building their team in the past. You know, they've always loved veteran guys. He did come in and play some good solid minutes. He had a couple of big games there for Miami, and he still, you know, is a solid shooter on occasion. I think you started to see some of the defensive liability there for a player at this point in his career. So you wonder whether or not he's going to fit into the future. And I think it's interesting how you tied, well, you didn't, but in our list of players to discuss, Joe Johnson and Luol Deng are both next to each other, and I think that's for a good reason. I think, you know, deciding on one kind of lets you know what to do about the other. I don't think you can afford to bring both of them back. I think Deng in particular is expected to command a great deal more in the open market. Joe Johnson, maybe not so much, although he said he wants to continue playing, and, he, you know, he does still provide some, you know, service there as far as perimeter shooting and, you know, let's say solid defense, if not great, at this point. He can be solid defensively. So it's an interesting question, and I don't know that Miami has the foresight to figure out whether or not, you know, they want a guy like that on their roster, a guy who's a good solid veteran but maybe no longer part of their future plans. And you have to wonder whether or not they're willing to commit a lot of money or a lot of years to a player, you know, who's 35, I think, 36. I'm not sure exactly how old Joe Johnson is, but yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what you do with either one of them. I think you try to sign one. Ideally, it would be a guy like Luol Deng because he was able to show some progress at playing the stretch four when Chris Bosh was out for the last half of the season. You moved Luol Deng in there, and he thrived in that role. He was able to stretch the floor. He was able to guard bigger players, but also, you know, use his quickness to defend and get past them as well. So I think you'd rather have a guy like Luol Deng who formed a friendship with Goran Dragic, who was a big part of the team, who was a contributor, especially in the first round of the playoffs. So that's the guy you'd want to bring, but I don't know if you can afford him.
Yeah, it helps that Luol Deng's about 3 years younger. You mentioned, I think Joe Johnson's 34, and I just looked, Luol Deng is 31. Right. And, you know, Luol Deng definitely has a place. He's probably not a three anymore, but he played really well as the small ball four for the Heat. He shot okay. He can do some things that maybe Joe Johnson can't do at this point in their careers. I'm not going to ask you to talk too much more about it. I want you guys to go check out the Heat Check Pod. They did it, and they've labeled him point guard, I guess center, power forward, and small forward. They've already talked a lot about Joe Johnson and Luol Deng, so go check it out there. But on Nate Duncan's pod, and it was their giant mock-off season, which has no bearing on what's actually going to happen, but I did think it was interesting that Luol Deng there, because there's just so much money out there. You know, I think he signed basically a one-year contract for $20 million because there's just so much damn money out there that they had to throw it somewhere. And if you're going to do that for 1 year, it really doesn't hurt the team to do that. I don't know if that's actually going to happen, especially at this point in Luol Deng's career. I think he's probably looking more toward a years over money at this point, just to make sure that he's locked in financially. But it's interesting.
Yeah.
So what about Amari Stoudemire?
He's gone. I think so. I think, you know, again, he fits the model that they've implemented in the past, bringing in guys that haven't won a ring at the tail end of their careers. But it's tough to say exactly. But there was some discussion at the end of the season, again, in a particularly tense moment, right as the season had ended. I think a reporter asked him whether he felt comfortable with the amount of playing time he got during the course of the season, and Stoudemire's response was, not really. You know, I wanted to play more. I thought I'd play more, and it just didn't work out that way. So that kind of rubbed a lot of fans and possibly the front office the wrong way. I think he was just so limited. He can't really do anything. He can't guard players. He's still pretty solid offensively. You know, you saw a couple of moments there where he was able to knock down a 15-footer. He can still finish at the rim well. He gave a lot of effort, but the athleticism is so lacking. And at this point, you know, with teams moving more towards small ball lineups, he's not going to be able to play much. And a lot of this is contingent upon whether or not Chris Bosh is going to be able to return. And the expectation from the team is that he is. And, you know, we hope, I think everybody around the league hopes that Chris Bosh comes back at full strength and is able to start the season. And I think that's what they're expecting. And if they have him there who can play the forward or center position, then a guy like Stoudemire is superfluous.
Yeah, I thought Stoudemire did some nice things this season, but you're right, he just doesn't have the mobility. And at this point in his career, he has to be a center. And you have Hassan Whiteside, you have Chris Bosh, who's, you know, he's one of their best lineups is when Chris Bosh is at the five, and obviously Winslow and everybody else coming through. So you're right, Stoudemire is probably a little extra here. So let's move on to the second biggest after Wade, but the biggest question mark for the Heat this summer, and that's Hassan Whiteside.
That's a tough one to predict. You know, I think from my perspective, I think he's gone. I fluctuate almost nearly every day as to whether or not he comes back. But everything I see from him, and again, you know, we take a lot of these comments and you make a judgment on them, not on him as a person or anything like that, but you have to expect that what he wants might be a bigger stage to kind of highlight his talents. And I think the money is going to be fairly equal, because I think the Heat front office doesn't see him necessarily as a max player. But he could wind up making nearly as much with the Heat, taking a smaller contract here because of the income tax in the state of Florida. So you have to wonder whether or not he wants the street cred that comes along possibly with being able to sign a larger contract with another team that might look more as far as the overall numbers are concerned, but that would wind up generating the same amount of actual income because of taxes, et cetera. It's tough to say where he fits in. I think, you know, clearly he's the priority for the Heat. If you're able to somehow secure a guy like Kevin Durant, then it's less likely that you bring a guy like Whiteside into play. I don't know that he necessarily wants like a good fit, or like he's all about winning things. He doesn't really say these things, and I know that a lot of it is reporters kind of steering him in that direction and trying to get him to go to talk more about himself than about the team and things of this sort. He takes the bait, you know, unfortunately. And so it's a tough situation there, because you're left with this guy who has a reputation for being, you know, kind of pigheaded and stubborn and selfish and all these things, and maybe a malcontent early in his career. And then he had two good solid years here, you know, really, 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 really productive years. And he had some moments where he lost his temper, and there are points there where you have to scratch your head and go, what the hell is he thinking? But overall, he's been a pretty solid player and you know, a solid locker room presence. You'd want to bring him back, but I think you'd ideally want him at an $18 to $20 million range and not over that.
Yeah, I think if the Heat get up to 18 or even 20, I think that Hassan Whiteside takes it.
What do you base that on? That's what I mean. I know you're going to explain it, but I'm curious as to what somebody outside of the situation thinks.
I think, even though he hasn't mentioned it, at least that I've heard, I think that he does appreciate that, you know, the Heat brought him in, they gave him a chance, they extended him, which was to their benefit, but they extended him into his first season for, you know, a guaranteed second season. And he's got a guy like Dwayne Wade, and I know UD Haslam's talked a little bit about, you know, if we brought you in and developed you, offer you all of this money, like I think you should say, I think he, you know, maybe he appreciates having that veteran presence around him. You know, he didn't start for a while in the second half of this season, although, you know, obviously when Bosch went down, that reverted back to how it was. And I think that maybe even helped. That second lineup improved, even that first lineup improved. And I think that even though, like I said, he hasn't really talked about it too much, I think that there's something to be said about just loyalty, even a little bit. And, you know, it's the Miami Heat way. And we discussed it a little bit earlier. You know, the Heat have an opportunity to bring Kevin Durant in. And even though that probably means that they wouldn't have Hassan Whiteside if they brought Kevin Durant in, they're getting meetings with all of these free agents. And, you know, he lives in South Beach. And we're talking about, you know, what does he make? About $1 million right now. And going up to 20 is a giant raise. And maybe he sees, you know, $20 million here is different than, you know, 22 in, you know, if I have to live in Portland. Or, you know, you're in South Beach and you can be the man sort of in South Beach, at least, you know, probably in your own head you're the man, but you're in South Beach doing what you want to do, playing 2K, get that rating up, and, you know, whatever it is. I think there's something to be said that if the Heat are willing, I probably disagree with you that I think he's coming back, because I think that if it's close, I think if it's within $2 or $3 million that he's just going to choose Miami because he's comfortable with it as well. And I think that's something to be said for a player who's really only been in the league for, you know, 2+ seasons right now.
My issue is then, you know, he's going to be, you know, going on this tour of different teams, and they're going to be trying to actively recruit him. And this is a process far different than what it was 2 years ago when nobody even wanted to bring him on for a tryout, you know, when he couldn't get a phone call from a number of teams in the league, and he was forced to play, like, you know, he's mentioned many times, at the YMCA in Gastonia, North Carolina, you know, outside the city of Charlotte. This is a guy that wasn't able to get a job in the league, and all of a sudden has kind of taken the league by storm and might very well be second to Kevin Durant as the top free agent in this class. So when you get a guy like, or, you know, other owners across the league who are going to fly you in on their private jets and wine and dine you and kind of make you a star, if only for a few hours, that's something, an allure there that he might not necessarily feel in Miami. And partly because they don't have to wine and dine him as much because, like you said, there's already a comfort level. And then the other factor in that is, you know, what if they're spending too much time focusing on the, you know, Kevin Durant possibility and not nearly enough time there by side? And he could feel slighted by that. Others, I think, have hinted at this or maybe even written about it. But, you know, it's a delicate balance that you have to maintain there, because you want to show him without losing focus on the possibility of bringing Durant, who I think is clearly the better option of the two, although some Heat fans don't feel that way, if you can believe it. No, seriously, there is a wide fans there that would say, to hell with KD, we got Hassan Whiteside here. And I'm like, well, if you know what you're talking about. Maybe you haven't seen a game recently with Kevin Durant in it, but.
Yeah, I think a lot of that, those same type of fans are the ones that were talking about the fleecing for, you know, Serge Ibaka for Victor Oladipo. I haven't really watched Victor Oladipo, who's fine, not great. I do want to say one thing about the whining and dining of Hassan Whiteside. I think Pat Riley obviously plays a big part in this, but, you know, if he does the same thing that he did to LeBron James two summers ago, where he talks about how, you know, basically it's Hassan Whiteside's responsibility, and, you know, it's easier to leave and all of this. I mean, he doesn't have to get down and bow down to Hassan Whiteside, but I think he needs, you know, to maybe be more complimentary, maybe say things like, you know, we can yes. do all of these things with you around.
Oh, that... and he did that, you know, not to interrupt, right. but he did that at the end of season conference when he said he's our top priority. That's a right. hell of a boost. That's an ego stroke right there.
Right, and that's what he should do if he wants to keep Hassan Whiteside, as opposed to some of the things that he said about LeBron James, which, you know, apparently it was sort of LeBron James motivation, which is awesome, but that's, you know, that's what Pat Riley needs to do. He needs to sort of say, you're great, we need you, you know, maybe not need you, but we'd love to have you around to anchor our defense, to catch lobs from Dwayne Wade and Goran Dragic and whoever else for the next 5 years, if we can, you know, or I guess 4 years, because they don't have the full board rights, but 4 years of your life, and you know, here's $80 million to live in South Beach. I think that sounds pretty cool, especially when that's, you know, you've been doing it for $1 million for the past 2 years, and it's sort of what you're used to. But, you know, I'm not going to pretend that I know exactly what Hassan Whiteside wants in free agency, but I can imagine that a $19 million pay raise is probably something that's pretty cool.
I'll take it.
Yeah, just a touch. Okay, so last thing, and really last thing. Any big predictions for the Heat and free agency? And let's not talk about these guys right here. And again, I'm not going to hold you to – well, I might hold you to it if it happens. But how about, like, trades, big signings, something crazy happening, anything that you see from Miami that they do this summer?
Well, they're not going to stay pat. If they whiff on both Whiteside and Durant, they're going to make a move. And what that move is, I don't think of the available free agents – I could see Al Horford being a strong possibility there because, you know, there are ties to Florida. His dad, Tito Horford, played at the University of Miami. It's a metropolitan city with a big Hispanic population there. So I think that certainly is an appealing factor. And I think, you know, Horford would certainly be comfortable in the Heat system there. You know, he's a good player who can fit off, you know, Chris Bosh if he's back at full strength, or Bosh is somehow unavailable or something like that. So I think he's a good fit. I think that's the guy that they move on to if they can't possibly get Whiteside or Durant. Other than that, like I mentioned before, you know, again, if they got to make a move, I could see them making a play on trading Goran Dragic. I think, you know, they've been linked to DeMarcus Cousins. That seems a very unlikely move there. But, you know, Pat Riley does centers. He's always historically done so when he was a coach or even a general manager of the team. So you could see him making a play for a guy like that, and you wonder whether or not that's a realistic possibility.
Yeah, that's awesome. That would be a lot of fun. Not that I wish you guys not getting Hassan Whiteside, but as long as it doesn't pertain to my team, I think craziness in the NBA is always a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
All right, that's all I got. David, do you have anything to plug?
Actually, no. I've been writing on and off, but for the most part, covering Summer League, which begins on Saturday, right, July 2nd, and continues on to Friday, July 8th. There should be a lot of fun, a lot of interesting, you know, players and teams there. So look for my work on Hardwood Paroxysm, Fansided, and Vice Sports.
Yeah, look for him everywhere. David's a good writer. Follow him on Twitter at DRAMIL13. That's DRAMIL13. You can follow me at Sean_Woods15. Find the podcast on iTunes, the Hardwood Paroxysm Podcasting Network. Leave a review, a 5-star rating, everything. I really do appreciate you guys, you know, still being with me here. I took a leave of absence, but we're back. I'm going to try to make this at least a semi-regular thing. Maybe have David on in a couple more times this summer, depending on what the Heat do. Hey, David, I really do appreciate you coming on, man, and we will talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, Sean.
Miami, South Beach, bringing the heat, can y'all feel that, can y'all feel that, jig it out,
Here I am in the place where I come let go. In Miami, the bass and the sunset low. Every day like a Mardi Gras. Everybody party all day. No work, all play, okay? So we sip a little something, leave the rest to spill. Me and Charlie at the bar running up a high bill. Nothing less than ill when we dress to kill. Every time the ladies pass, they be like, can y'all feel me? All ages and races, real sweet faces. Every different nation, Spanish, Haitian, Indian, Jamaican, black, white, Cuban or Asian. I only came for 2 days of playing, but every time I come, I always wind up staying. This the type of town I can spend a few days in. Miami, the city that keeps the roof blazing.
Party in the city where the heat is on, all night on the beach till the break of dawn.
Welcome to Miami.
Bouncing in the club where the heat is on, all night on the beach till the break of dawn.
I'm going to Miami. Yo, I heard the rainstorms ain't nothing to mess with, but I can't feel a drip on the strip. It's a trip. Ladies half dressed, full of your quip, and they be screaming out. So I'm thinking I'ma scoop me something hot in this South Summer rain game melting pot. Hottest club in the city, and it's right on the beach. Temperature, get to ya, it's about to reach 500 degrees in the Caribbean seas with the hot mommies screaming. Every time I come to town, they be spotting me in the drop Bentley, ain't no stopping me. So cashing your dough and flow to this fashion show, pound for pound anywhere you go. Yo, ain't no city in the world like this, and if you ask how I know, I got to plead the fifth.
Miami,
where the heat is on.
Miami bringing heat for real. Y'all don't understand. I never seen so many Dominican women with cinnamon tans. Mira, this is the plan. Take a walk on the beach, draw hot in the sand. Give me your hand. Damn, you look sexy. Let's go to my yacht in the West Keys. Ride my jet skis, lounge under the palm trees. Cause you gotta have cheese for the summer house piece on South Beach. Water so clear, you can see to the bottom. $100,000 cars, everybody got them. Ain't no surprise in the club to see Sly Stallone. Miami, my second home.
Town.